Blog Talk Radio.
...of KJMA's practice of constructive community reporting, we have invited Dr. Khalid Mohammed, Minister and Supreme Captain of Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Yeah, Kamachi and Priest, the chapel doors are back open. I don't bargain with the devil or the sin he produced before I sell my people out. You can string up a noose, I'm a Zulu. I laugh at the lightning of Zeus, the light from my aura, enough to ripen the fruits. I'm miking some truths, enlighten the youth. Rap jihad, my voice makes a lot on the loose. Arabian nights, prayer rugs kept in the booth. To the east, my brother, where I step with the troops. Keep coming back, making sure the rest can get loose. Like old Harriet, Holy Land, sailing a chariot. My body gold from the land where they buried it. Mother Earth, my first, no choice but to marry it. Burdens of the world is cool, how I carry it. I'm not a snitch or a Judas Iscariot. How could I fear bid? Nigga, here it is. You love Ferraris and Barbies, we build pyramids. We from different minds, different continents, different consciousness, different prophets, different times. Kamachi and Priest, the Church of Philly and Brook, give us donations, don't give us a look, cause we don't live by the word, we live with the book. I see something classic is happening, the people is hooked. It's real hip hop, you should be taking a look. It's real hip hop, you should be taking a look. And then y'all gotta all hell, or when the kings come, voices all yell. Bless us and sing some, y'all better all hell. Or when the kings come, voices all yell. Bless us and sing some, y'all better all hell. Or when the kings come, voices all yell. Bless us and sing some, y'all better all hell. Or when the kings come, voices all yell.
Emerge from crack smoke, rats and roaches. Cast that poke, young cats that wrap up dope. The hopeless, a poor man's dream. Moorish king, the locust. Over the spectrum, preach the Nephilim. Focus your eyes on an ego. Cathedral size, I'm holding a pen lethal. A needle inscribed to dopeness. Pharaoh headdress, right before my bed rest. Commercial raps, stingy hooks, I could care less. A mystery book, sacred beater on my bed chest. Preach Osiris, black chalk around my eyelids. Gold mask, broad nose and wide lips. Riding papyrus, light inside my iris. Sight of a psychic, coloring flows, my mic's a pilot. When it comes to hook, I'm like a pirate. Priest Kamachi, we ether the body. Flood streets like tsunamis. Bring heat like when you eat wasabi. Beast the skeleton, my words are the flesh. The flow's the melanin, song is the breath. My rhymes the medicine, it can cure after death. My mind's the afterlife, the thought sees all the words I manifest.
And then y'all better all hell. Or when the kings come, voices all yell. Bless us and sing some, y'all better all hell. Or when the kings come, voices all yell. Bless us and sing some, y'all better all hell. Or when the kings come, voices all yell. Bless us and sing some, y'all better all hell. Or when the kings come, voices all yell. Bless us and sing some.
Yeah, there you have it, it's not just a rumor, it's real. Real hip hop is back up in the building. Chief Kamachi, Killer Priest, collabo. Laugh at all your mistakes. Know what I mean? Don't get scared, don't run. Chief Cypress. Shout it out. Thug it out. Gorilla, gorilla yourself side to side. Just gorilla yourself.
People, it's your brother, your soldier in arms, and comrade in battle, Sean Saddam Kweli, and I'm happy to be able to broadcast live once again to you from right here in the hells and smells of North America. As always, this is a privilege, it's a joy, and we count this among the esteemed honors to be able to talk to you, our sisters, our brothers, and some others from this bold revolutionary radio broadcast called Black Power Radio, an empowerment broadcast designed to lift you up, pick your spirit up, your revolutionary thirst quenched, your African or black thirst quenched, because it's a desert out here all day long, all night long. Television promoting wicked images, wicked programming, wicked radio broadcast, sellout hip-hop artists, men dressing like women and women dressing like men all day long. You never hear anything good about yourself normally, black man. Never hear anything good about yourself normally, black woman. And so this is the place, Monday night, where we come to change all of that. 8 p.m. on that time clock, Eastern time, hearing the hells and smells. We send these signals out to you. Get your head up. And I'll let you know that even though it may be rough, it may get hard, it may be tough, the struggle still continues. We open the show giving thanks to the God of our forefathers and foremothers, who answers and is called by many names. And we bear witness to them all. We bear witness regardless to the land, regardless to the label, regardless to the language. There is only but one God. And we in the New Black Panther Party, we recognize that God in the masculine and the feminine expression. We know that male and female are twin halves of the same divine essence. And so we give thanks to the original people, that's us, our ancestors, the original man and original woman, the first people to walk in the light of the sun, first to build a real government, not this old funny stuff, not this old tricky stuff, this old capitalistic blood-sucking stuff, not a government that's made just for the rich. We're thankful to our ancestors for the example of a government and governments that fed the world right there from the east, from our throne there in Africa, where we taught every culture knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. And we even pulled the Caucasian white man up out of the caves and hillsides of Europe and taught them even how to speak civil and how to stop eating each other. And as you see in the movie depictions, hitting each other over the head and dragging their white woman into the caves after beating her over the head with clubs. It was black people that civilized white folks. For those of you out there, I heard Sister Toni Braxton a few weeks ago make the comment that, you know, they were acting civil, acting Caucasian. No, Sister Toni, you were acting black. You were acting African, acting civil. It was us who taught the cultures, the sciences, the mathematics. We taught the chemistry, and we taught the spiritualities. All of that came from the bowl of Africa, whether it's Christianity, whether it's Judaism or Hebrew, whether it's Islam, whether it's the comedic sciences, whether it's the Rastafarian, whether it's even the Buddhism, whatever you got, and even the ones I didn't name, all that comes from the bowl, the beautiful bowl of Africa. And so we give thanks to our ancestors for their divine wisdom, their divine teaching, their divine guidance. We give thanks to them that even in a dark period that we went through as a people, where we began to fall into the hands of slave traders and slave merchants, because the pilgrims, the so-called pilgrims, the criminal settlers, were desirous under the instruction of the Queen of England and others build a country of their own or a nation of their own. England had kicked out its criminals, and George Washington and the rest of those criminals had to build up a territory of their own. And so they had to seek the knowledge from the people who had already built the kingdoms, who had already built the legacies, who had already had the foundation and the information on how to do it. They had to go to that people and capture that people who had the information and inspiration on how to nation build and how to control land and territory and rule. And so they began to try to round our people up. And our people fought back violently, killing all kind of criminal settlers and white folks all over the place. A few of us got captured or placed on slave ships, back packed and tacked in there like sardines, from can't see morning to can't see night, right on top of each other. No bathroom. Bathroom right there in the boat with you. They called the ship the Jesus of Lubeck, ship Jesus of Lubeck. And it was captained by a captain named John Hawkins and some others. This is real American history, where your people were captured and brought here on a westerly course, taken there through the Caribbean and stripped of name and language, stripped of culture, stripped of folkway, stripped of foray, stripped of norm, and stripped of the power of our own being, taken away from our original mother tongue, everything that was our culture that made us the bold, beautiful, majestic people that we once were, taken from you, replaced with an inferior information and an inferior knowledge, started calling you out of your name, started calling you coons, started calling you colored people, started calling you niggers, started calling you shine, started calling you ham bones. Some of our people had to put their faces in laughing barrels, couldn't laugh in the public, couldn't be seen happy in the public, couldn't smile in the public, or you'd be killed. Our women were hung up by ropes, the pregnant women used as an example to put fear in the strong, wise, rebellious black man and black woman, strung up by ropes, the pregnant womb cut open, and when the fetus would fall out, the no good bastard would stomp on the fetus or the baby with his boot heel. And that struck fear in the rest of the so-called slaves. But as always, when we even got here to the shores of Jamestown, Virginia, we fought all the way, got here and fought. By the time we were stripped down, we went to work and had to try to build up and survive and overthrow and overtake our enemies and at the same time make our way back home. So you had bold ones that rose up amongst us. You had the greats like Nat Turner, who said he read the verse in the Bible that talked about an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, a life for a life, a limb for a limb. He read the verses like everything has a season. There's a time to plant and a time to pluck up. There's a time to heal and a time to kill. He read all that in the Bible, and Nat Turner determined for hearing what he called the voice of God in his head, that it was time to take action against the slave master and the plantation owners. And he began to rally up and go from plantation to plantation. He began to try to slit some white throats and kill some white folks. That's what Nat Turner did with that Bible, while you punk preachers is out there preaching the Bible in a punk, sissified way. We give you the gospel of Nat Turner, when Nat Turner said it was an eye for an eye. And then when you try to harm me or kill me or my family or enslave me, that I have to destroy you by God's command. And so you had Nat Turner who came up, and you had others who came up like the great Denmark Vesey. You had those in Haiti like the great Boukman and Dessalines and other areas where they begin and they won. They won in Haiti. They overthrew the white man and ran him out in Haiti and successfully defeated their enemies, giving spark and rise to the rebellions and the revolutions here in the hills of North America, gave birth to the greats here who fought on this soil to get us free, gave birth to the greats who wanted to see us free and walk in the light of a brighter sun. So we always give thanks to the greats like I mentioned, and those like Sister Queen Harriet Tubman, and we give thanks for the great Sister Yaa Asantewaa before her, the great general. We give thanks to the sister soldiers and the male soldiers, Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey's, and of course the UNIA, who had his own military, had his own boat, had his own, I should say, ship, had his own banking system. He had his own nation he was building here in the hills of North America, and a no good devil by the name of J. Edgar Hoover, or who our national chairman are called J. Edgar Hitler. He worked to set that black man up on mail fraud charges through a, what would later be known as the counterintelligence program, and had him shipped off while all them followers watched him be shipped off when he died with a broken heart. Thanks for him and his effort. We give thanks to Nobuhiro Ali and his effort of raising up who we call the Asiatics, or the people, the black people who were the representation of God on the earth. We give thanks to the Nation of Islam and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and those whom he taught and whom he raised. The greats like Minister Louis Farrakhan and Minister Malcolm X and Imam Walter Dean Muhammad and Muhammad Ali and on and on and on. Those you know and some you don't know, but he raised up many. Raised up banks, raised up schools, farmland, tractors, airplanes, had it. And then the evil accident of time as he made his departure and left from the scene, and then the nation took a fall. We give thanks for his effort and thanks for their effort today as they continue to struggle and continue to maneuver. And those who labor under the instructions of the Honorable Marcus Garvey continue to struggle and continue to maneuver. We give thanks for those like the Honorable Kwame Ture and SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And we give thanks for Lowndes County, Alabama, and their beginnings of the Black Panther Party, and them teaching a revolutionary teaching to black men and women on how to resist the white supremacists who were denying you your right to exercise black political power in the South, and how they moved on the forces against the reactionary Ku Klux Klan and began to organize our people under the slogan of black power and the banner of black power. The Honorable Kwame Ture, Mukasa Ricks, formerly Willie Ricks, and others who worked with them in the South. It started that Black Panther Party coming out of Africa, moving it up to the north, to the West Coast in Northern California, and moving it into the early beginnings in Chicago and New York early on, and teaching two young, bold students at a Merritt College who saw police brutality there in Oakland, California, and saw it there in the Bay Area, who saw it there across the country, and seeing that the state would not take care of black people the way that it took care of the Caucasian people. And so they began to organize in the community for self-defense, and they took that Black Panther and called it the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, and began to defend black people in Oakland, California, and begin to defend black people as chapters grew throughout the world and throughout the country and the world. We're thankful for Minister of Defense Huey P. Newton and Chairman Bobby Seale and the Forte brothers and the great Elbert Big Man Howard. And we're thankful to the martyr of the Black Party, little Bobby Hutton, for his sacrifice, and on and on, just a long list of just heroes and sheroes that came out of those formations, and the breakaways like the Black Liberation Army and those who believed in armed resistance and armed struggle over the political community programs of the Black Panther Party, those who understood and believed that there had to be an armed resistance struggle to aid in the political apparatus and the political above-ground actions of the Black Panther Party. And so those who took that spirit, those like the Queen Warrior, Sada Shakur, and the great Daruba Bin Wahad, and the great Russell Maroon Schultz, and on and on and on, those who fought in that manner, we honor you and give thanks to you tonight on Black Power Radio. We give thanks before them for Robert F. Williams and the Deacons for Defense, and everybody, just too many to name. Y'all got to forgive me. I mean, but I'm just trying to prick your brain and let you know that our people have struggled for a consciousness in America for a long time, for a bite to eat in America for a long time, for a place to sit down at in America for a long time, just to go into a restaurant and be able to be comfortable, to go into the movie theater and watch a movie, be able to go into a shoe store and put on a pair of shoes. Your people have sacrificed, fought in the streets, organized, went to jail, out of jail, some shot down by the police, some shoot back at the police, others taking care of their babies, giving liberation schools, feeding the children, educating our own, just for us to be where we are today. And so we have a big debt of gratitude for those warriors and warrioresses who have helped us to get where we are. We began 1989. We started out of Dallas, Texas. Minister Huey P. Newton was assassinated by a low-level member of the BGF, Tyrone Robinson, just to get some rank. And who knows what else. I don't even want to go into it. Assassinated in Oakland, California, shot 3 times, point-blank range in the head over what they erroneously call a drug deal gone wrong. And from that blood that was left on that concrete, that blood going down into the concrete produced another rose that come up out of the concrete that would pull together the Panther fragments that was decimated by the onslaught of the U.S. government through its COINTELPRO apparatus against the Panthers and against revolutionary vanguard movements across the country. And from 1989, that stream of energy and light that was all around the country and that was assaulted through the Reaganomics and that quote-unquote war on drugs that was a war on black people and a war on us in the community. We reformed in 1989 with the initiative and the spirit to rebuild the work, to rebuild the legacy, and to practice the cause of revolutionary culture, the tradition of revolutionary culture, and to be ourselves, which was the original people. And so we came back and reformed and rebuilt and began to organize under the leadership of a producer out of Dallas, Texas, who had the heart to fight and organize with some other young men and women and a man out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, who was an alderman there named Michael McGee. But I'm talking about the founder of the new Black Panther Party named Aaron Michaels, who restarted the tradition of Pantherism in the hells and smells of North America. And then a bold, bald-headed black man who was a foot soldier in the Nation of Islam, as I told you earlier, that bold Nation of Islam, and then became a lieutenant, became a captain, became a minister, became a regional minister, then made his way up into being a national assistant, a national spokesman, to being supreme captain over the military wing or the elite military wing of the Nation of Islam. And then after the the Honorable Elijah Muhammad departed in 75, he went into the jungles of Uganda and organized there with Idi Amin to fight against the apartheid colonial forces there in Uganda and begin to help to drive the white man out of Africa and to reassert the black position in Africa, and then came back to North America to help the Honorable Minister Farrakhan rebuild the works of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that had been destroyed. And then he labored in that organization, labored in that movement, labored in that cause until around 1993-94, when an assassination attempt, 1994, Riverside, California, an assassination attempt took place on his life. A man named James Best tried with the backing of the JDL, which is the Jewish Defense League, the military extremist arm of the ADL, which is the Anti-Defamation League, which is one of the enemies of the new Black Panther Party, tried to work with Herb Reuven and those bastards to assassinate the black power general, the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad. And so that was unsuccessful. He survived, took his time, made a tourniquet, gave instructions, got to the hospital, survived, and on crutches began to re-nurse himself and heal himself with the help of that black man and woman and the women and black men I told you about, the new Black Panther Party in Dallas, Texas, and that marriage and that union was formed. And from there up until late 97 to 98, he was named national chairman, became national chairman of the organization. And from that point on, he led from that point of 98 to 2001. And from 2001, he made his physical transition. But he trained up an attorney general, a man from Howard University out of Los Angeles, California, who had an organization called Unity Nation. And he worked and worked tirelessly on the campuses of Howard University and other colleges around the country to organize black men and women to rise to self-determination. And he trained with the Honorable Khalid Muhammad and ultimately became the national chairman, first national minister of justice, then national spokesman, and then national chairman. And you know him as the attorney at war, and we know him as the attorney general, Attorney Malik Solution-Baz. And he completed his term and organized in all kind of maneuvers, and Katrina and otherwise, nose to nose with the police, in jail, all kind of stuff, Cincinnati rebellions. He did all kind of stuff, put a reward out for George Zimmerman when the state of Florida wouldn't carve him up, wouldn't prosecute him and try to let that case die out like they tried, like they did Jordan Davis and Michael Dunn, and carve George Zimmerman up and put pressure on that bastard to at least make him face his accusers. And he did that. His term ended in 2013 of November, and he held the line all of that time, the longest standing chairman of any Panther regiment, passing the torch to a black man who was there with the Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad. The time he was shot in Riverside, California, coming out of Dallas, Texas, in the Fort Worth area himself, with a think tank called MIAT, the Metropolitan African American Think Tank, as he was organizing with great thinkers and scholars like Dr. Leonard Jeffries, and he was bringing in Dr. John Henry Clark, and he was bringing in Dr. Tony Martin and Tony Browder and the great Ashraf Qazis and those who were analyzing what was happening in black America, but were also putting forth solutions on solving the ills of our communities, not depending on Yale or Harvard or Princeton or any of them other institutions that slant the numbers or will fix the numbers to benefit a white supremacist, pig power structured goal. They had a metropolitan African-American think tank, and they organized in a revolutionary fashion, and ultimately he began to roll and maneuver with the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad and became his national assistant, and then finally became his national chief of staff until the generals dipped his own after laboring for 12 years with Attorney Malik Zulu-Shabazz, coming to his own as the national chairman of the organization. And he's doing a fine job, and a job that we all must support, and a job that we all must back, talking about the general, Minister Hashim Nzinga. We send you black power from him, and I send you black power from me and black power from the National Central Committee. And I gave you all of that history because some of you newer ones, some of you younger ones, you don't know that. You don't know that history, but you know it now. And it ties into the discussion that we're going to have tonight, and we must get into tonight as we're talking about unlocking the black genius. Unlocking the black genius, and we should say within you. Unlocking the black genius in you. There's much attention that's paid to geniuses of other cultures. People focus a lot on the Albert Einsteins and the Platos and the this ones and the that ones of other cultures, but there's little attention that is paid, or not enough attention that is paid, to the black geniuses that were here yesterday, that are here today, and that will be here tomorrow. Black genius. And I want to say, as we prepare to bring on our guests and talk to our guests and hear from our co-host tonight, who is a very seasoned veteran in the black liberation struggle and a sister who prides herself on struggling in this mission, in this movement, in the same manner that great queen warrior, Sister Assata Shakur, struggled in, which was to be confrontational, or use confrontational politics with the enemy, while at the same time educating your people in a political way to let them know they can take action. I'm talking about our national spokeswoman of the New Black Panther Party, Sister Queen Warrior Nadia Assata Shakur, who will join us tonight in a few moments, as she's coming on with us to help to guide this discussion, as we are interested in black genius and want to really, really expound upon and build black geniuses in our community. And I have to say that that's what it will take. It will take black geniuses to help us to come up out of this condition. It won't take the same old, same old. It won't take the, you know, the go along to get along. It won't take the same tired, worn out answers that have been given over the past quarter of a century. It will take black genius to solve the condition of the black man and black woman, to implement the program, the 10-point program of the New Black Panther Party in the lives of black people in a way that makes sense, and in a way that we can come together upon and work together to benefit our lives, you're going to have to be some geniuses. You're going to have to be a people who are using your intellect, your mind, your ability, and your talent to get out the situation, not in a spooky way, in an actual way. So let me bring her on now, and we'll also, we have some special guests with us tonight. We have a black man who is a really a world-renowned individual. He's a world-renowned individual, and I know that, you know, we say that, you know, sometimes, and it's just, you know, not us necessarily, but people say that, and they're hyping people up, you know what I mean? And they're just, you know, putting a little, what they call a little fluff on it. But I'm not putting any fluff on this at all, on either of these individuals who's coming to this radio broadcast tonight. We're talking about a black man who has been featured in Uptown and NBC and Essence and Success Mag and Black Enterprise, CNN, Ebony, CNBC, USA Today, you know, all of that. He, you know, is a man who impacts day-to-day management of organizations and institutions. That's just, I mean, that's straight up what it is. He impacts on a day-to-day basis organizations and institutions. He's a tireless educator. He's an author, a B-school professor, and he's universally characterized as one of the most insightful and scholarly writers in his field today, a man who is a lecturer and a researcher in the field of management, entrepreneurship, and human potential. And he encourages his readers to look within to extract the keys that underline all accomplishment. You know, I mean, I'm telling you, he has expounded on the works of a man who some of you have heard of, if you read a lot, Napoleon Hill, who wrote a book called Think and Grow Rich. And this brother put the black twist on it. And it's basically like the black man's guide to thinking and grow rich. Now he's got a book out called The Wealth Choice. And so we expect to hear from our brother, Brother Dennis P. Kimbrough. Dr. Dennis P. Kimbrough, who will be on with us talking about this unlocking the black genius. And then we have with us another black man who is doing some pretty remarkable things. And we're happy to say that because he himself, he's within the what we call the criminal just us system. He's within the criminal just us system. And he's a hard worker, a black man who is interested in cleaning up our people in a way that makes sense. And he understands that the system is not for our people. When you go before these judges and when you go before these courts and do all that type of deal, it is not for us at all. And so his brother's coming on. He got an operation called Operation Clean Slate. And with that operation, he is helping to inspire the lives of black men and women and turn people around at a fast rate that's shocking to the state of Birmingham, the city of Birmingham, the state of Alabama down there. We're going to hear from that great Honorable Chief Magistrate Maurice Muhammad, who will be on with us and to talk their talk and to talk about unlocking that black genius and talk about reversing that trend, that revolving door that we see happening there in the court system, and things that we can do to help our loved ones when they're in that predicament, or hell, if we find ourselves in that situation. But let me go ahead and bring in our national spokeswoman, Sister Nadia Shakur, and then we'll bring our guest in. Welcome, Sister. Black Power.
Peace. Salute, comrade. I want to give greetings to my national and universal black African family and all the universal black African cries of warfare. Black power, all power to the people. Yohuru Sasa, Abibi Fahodie, Izwe Lethu, and my personal favorite, fuck the police. Now, as you were saying earlier, comrade, you were speaking on us unlocking the black genius within. And I have to tell you, sir, I'm very enthusiastic about this topic tonight because this is a subject that is detrimental to the development of the African mind state. I first want to start out on speaking on the definition of genius, because I'm somewhat of a dialectical thinker, comrades and listeners, so I want y'all to follow me systematically so we can go through this in a very systematic and precise analysis. Therefore, we can leave nothing to caution, and we can throw all caution to wind, and we can tell the truth tonight. So we are going to unlock the black genius within, but first let's find out what is genius. Therefore, no one can say that we're being nationalistically biased or having some unjustified superiority complex. Here on Black Power Radio on Blog Talk, we only stand on certified, historically proven truths and factual evidence. So according to the European Webster's Dictionary, the definition of genius is exceptional intellectual or creative power or the natural ability of such. Talent, gift, flair, brilliance, intelligence, ability, wisdom, a fortitude of brilliance. A person who is exceptionally intelligent, creative, either generally or in some particular respect. Mastermind. In some mythologies, a genius is regarded to a guardian spirit associated with a person, place, or institution. A person regarded as exerting a powerful influence over another for good or evil. The prevalent character or spirit of something as a nation or age. So what we basically have just read here is genius is the natural ability to use your brain to produce change and institutions that will develop civilization over time. I want to focus on the word natural, because in order for us to truly unlock the black genius within, we have to first accept that that is our natural ability, comrades. As Africans, yes, as black people here in the United States of America, we are Africans in America. It is our natural genetic code to be intellectually proficient. It
That's
is
right.
A wise tale. It is a falsehood and a beaten and tortured mentality for us to believe that it is our natural proclivity to be ignorant and blissfully dumb. This has been a nature that we have adapted in compliance with the state or the conditions of slavery, post and pre-colonial, and the pseudo-freedoms given to us during the post-chattel slavery, economic chattel plantation, farm hand, give you a pail and make you fish and farm cotton, but you're in debt to the corner store system that made us think the only way that we will ever be accredited in this society is if we struggle to learn the customs and ways in the institutions that they proclaim to be of higher learning. Here on Black Power Radio tonight, we declare that we will destroy the mask of white supremacy over the African scholars. We will destroy the myth of the stupidity and the buffoonery of the indigenous African. There is a reason why the world-renowned disciplines that all universities must study purposefully created research institutions, groups, think tanks, and organizations to find, analyze, and then mask, cover, veil the true intellectual scholarly history of ancient Africans. And this is not something that we just did pre-time. Yes, yes. Let us emphasize ancient Africans, because there's no way that we can lock something within us if we do not go back to the beginning, comrade. That is one of the problems of the black man and the black woman here in America. We continue to focus on our present effects, and we refuse to deal with our past causes of white supremacy.
Right.
And sister spokeswoman,
what we're going to do right here, sis, is we're going to bring in our guests, because we don't want to hold him in, but you're going to have all the opportunity to ask him all the questions that you need. And you know, we on Black Power Radio going to stretch out. But let's go ahead and bring him in. And as I told you all, he's no slouch by any stretch of the imagination. And a black man who is making his rounds, making sure that he wakes up our minds and wakes up our hearts and puts us into action. I want you, brothers and sisters, to welcome to Black Power Radio our brother, friend, and champion in the cause of intellectual stimulation and liberation, our brother, Brother Dennis Kimbrough. Black Power, welcome to the radio broadcast, sir.
Oh, my God bless you all. You could have selected anybody to be on your show. I am honored. What a beautiful hey, listen, I'm spellbound listening to everybody, and I'm just honored to be here. Just, you know, a voice in the wilderness trying to speak truth to power. And, hey, you're making a difference in the community.
Certainly appreciate you and want to thank you for being on with us. And I know there's a lot of people that are anxious to hear from you and hear what you've been doing, your work, your research, your travels, and all of that. But I want to just start simple. We want to start simple and just ask you, who is Dr. Dennis Kimbrough? Where were you born? Where did you start? Where did you come from? How did you get going?
Well, you know, I'm an open book. When I got my fancy, and I tell my students, I teach at Clark Atlanta University School of Business. I tell them all the time, when I got my fancy PhD degree, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I certainly knew what I didn't want to do. And though I went the corporate route, I spent 12 years in corporate America, I knew that wasn't for me. I didn't want to be like many of my colleagues who couldn't wait to go to Wall Street and make a killing in the stock market. I'm not knocking that, but that wasn't for me. And at the time, I didn't even want to teach. But what in the world do you do when you got those three letters, PhD, at the end of your name, and that's what I do now, and I'm fulfilled by it. But all I wanted to do before I made my transition and went on to the next phase of this journey called life, I had to have the answers to two questions. Question number one, why does one person succeed while another fails? And question number two, why is one individual rich and wealthy while another is impoverished? So I carved out a list. We're going back to the 1980s of 50 African-American men and women. They didn't know me, but I certainly knew them. These are black folks who wrote their name on the tablet of success. And after I interviewed them, I added another 50 and another 50, and I quit counting at 150 interviews. And out of that came a book. And the Napoleon Hill Foundation, who wrote the original Think and Grow Rich, heard of what I was doing. I wrote an article for Success Magazine, and that article made it to the desk of W. Clement Stone, who in the 1970s was arguably one of the world's wealthiest. Now, for your listeners out there who have no idea who Napoleon Hill was, here was a white gentleman born in Wise County, Virginia, who wrote 16 books in his lifetime, two of his books, mega bestsellers. His first book, Law of Success, in which he spent 20 years of his life, but in 1933, Think and Grow Rich, what got this country out of its second depression. Before he died, in 1970, he was attempting to write a black version of his all-time classic. He got 100 pages into the manuscript, died of a stroke. He was 87 years old. And W. Clement Stone pulled me out of the work that I was doing and asked me to finish, complete, and update this book. And you're talking about mega copies, Think and Grow Rich, of Black Choice. I'm listening. There I am listening. We were talking about greatness. You see, there's an African proverb that says, if you don't know who you are, anybody can name you. And if anybody can name you, you will answer to anything. And that's what we have been doing as a race. The book that I just finished, which is the number one business book right now in Black America, The Wealth Choice, it's a 7-year study on black millionaires. Now, why is this critically important? Because over a 7-year period, all I did, number one, I used a full-blown survey. I asked these black millionaires 118 questions that they completed anonymously. Now, some of them attached their business card to the survey. Some wrote their name on the survey. Some even hand-delivered the survey to me. Number two, I had 6 focus groups around the country. If you were an African-American and you were in 7 figures, you did not get into these focus groups. I had 1 focus group in North Carolina. I had three in the Atlanta area. I had a huge focus group in Washington, D.C. In that focus group in Washington, D.C. was Bob Johnson, founder of BET, Carla Harris, most powerful black woman on Wall Street. The Roberts brothers, Michael and Steve Roberts, were both in that focus group in Washington, D.C. I had a smaller focus group in Omaha, Nebraska, and just a small one with black females out in Las Vegas. And then last but not least, I had 50 to 60 interviews with our wealthiest, trying to ascertain, hey, if you can do it, others can do it, trying to replicate this success. Now, when I started out, I made the distinction, I don't want any athletes, any entertainers. Not knocking that. Now, I've had athletes approach me because I've been in locker rooms speaking to these brothers, trying to pour some sense into them. You know, they say, man, Dr. Kimber, at least let me finish the survey, man. Let me do it. And I said, no, I'm not into that. Well, why won't you include athletes? Because I tell them I'm after wealth, not income. But obviously there were some folks I had to interview. So I interviewed Tyler Perry, and I interviewed Damon John of Shark Tank, and I interviewed Antonio Reed of X Factor. And I interviewed Kathy Hughes of Radio 1. And I told you about Bob Johnson. And I can go on and on and on and on and on. And what I discovered over a seven-year period are seven best practices that these black millionaires incorporate on a daily basis. Now, why is this critically important? Because you can come to my house right now in southwest DeKalb, Atlanta, Georgia, right out here in the suburbs. I will place the remote control in your hand, and I will sit you in front of one of my flat-screen TVs. And you might find Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook being interviewed. You might find Steve Jobs, being interviewed. He made his transition, months ago. You might find Phil Knight of Nike Shoes being interviewed. You might find Bill Gates being interviewed. But I'm asking you right now, and I'm asking your listeners out there in the hinterland, can you name your five black billionaires? I doubt if anybody can even name them. You see, that is the problem. We don't see or hear from our wealth creators. Now, you're talking about innovation, and you're talking about creativity. Let me tell you what the Census Bureau is predicting. About a decade ago, the Census Bureau predicted that Hispanics will be the number one minority group. So 10 years goes by, and sure enough, I'll be damned, Hispanics are the largest minority group. Let me tell you what the Census Bureau is predicting by 2025, 2030 at the latest, just 10, 12 years, 15 years from now. They are saying by 2025, the largest and fastest growing black middle class will no longer be in the United States. It'll be in Africa. So what are we saying? That we couldn't even keep Martin Luther King dreams alive for 60 years. We couldn't do that. Now, people will say, we're black, we're poor. Nonsense. There's 175 countries that belong to the United Nations. In terms of wealth, black America, we are the 16th wealthiest country on the face of the earth. Our problem is not money. Our problem is what we do with our money. And you go back to your most prolific scholar, W.E.B. Du Bois. And I don't run and hide. I mean, my Ph.D. came from Northwestern University, one of the top 20 schools in the world. So what can you do with a doctorate from Northwestern University? You can teach anywhere. But where do I teach? I teach right here in Atlanta, Georgia, Clark, Atlanta. I stand before black faces every Tuesday and Thursday. I walk the same bricks that W.E.B. Du Bois worked. And here's the thing. Before he died, he wrote a book called The Negro in Business. You go ahead and get a copy of that book. And within the first 30 pages, he says two things. He says, number one, the man or woman who won't control his or her finances won't control anything else. And when he said anything else, he wasn't meaning monetarily. He wasn't meaning financial. He was meaning quality of life. Now, you go into black community, I don't care whether you go in New York City or whether you go into Compton, California, outskirts of Los Angeles, and the first thing you notice, a church on every corner. And even with a church on every corner, we are number one in the world. Black America is number one in the world in teenage pregnancy. We're number one in the United States in bankruptcy. We're number one in the United States in new HIV cases. 40% of African Americans don't even use a bank for their financial transactions. 27% no savings. 30% spend more on a weekly basis than what they bring in. That's what he meant, won't control anything else. And then something else that he said, nothing positive will ever occur in a community that doesn't circulate its dollars. So we're the 16th wealthiest country in the face of the world, and we don't circulate our dollars. The average dollar stays in the black community less than a day. Less than a day. And you look at other groups. You look at Asian Americans, the average dollar in the Asian community, 29 days. Damn it, that's a month. In the Jewish community, 19 days. In the East Indian community, are you ready for this? 45 days. Our problem is not money. Our problem is what we do with our money. And no one is there to point the way. But you look at Africa, you got four African countries right now that are classified as emerging markets. Emerging markets, innovation, and creativity. Now, here we are as a race. We invented education. We invented education. You go back, every year you got 2 million kids that are going to take the SAT. And I don't care whether you look at the math, I don't care if you look at the verbal. Who invented the math and who invented the verbal? In 2712 B.C., a black man by the name of Imhotep was not only the father of engineering, he was the father of mathematics. And before he died, he called a young black man aside, a young brother aside, by the name of Pythagoras. And there isn't a ninth grade or 10th grade high school geometry student that can pass geometry unless you know what? The Pythagorean theorem. In 407 A.D., a black woman by the name Hypatia invents algebra. We don't even know that. We got black kids right now say, I'm no good in math. Well, damn it, you invented math. Oh, I can't pass algebra. Sweetheart, you invented algebra. So go ahead and look at the verbal. 460 B.C., an ex-slave by the name of Aesop invents the written word. There would be no Chaucer. There would be no Steinbeck. There would be no Dickens. There would be no Hemingway. There would be no nobody if it wasn't for this black man who invents the written word. We have got to raise our consciousness. Damn it, enough is enough. And two things we got to do, and then I'm going to shut up and listen. Two things we got to do. Number one, you got to get all the naysayers. You got to get all the non-achievers. You got to get all those with the negative attitude. You got to get all the non-believers, the chronic complainers. Get them out of the room. I don't know where you're going. I still love you. Give me a hug. But damn it, you're getting the hell out of here. I can't be bothered with you anymore, my brother. I love you. Hey, let me see if I can help you. Give me some dap, but you got to go. And then when you get all those individuals out of the room, get them off the playing field, you better find a way to put a notebook computer in the hand of every black elementary school child in this country. Why? Because that's where the new ideas come from, the digital divide. No one watches TV more than African Americans. And you look at Hollywood. All right, the Oscars were on a month ago. Every year, Hollywood produces 500 movies. Every year, Hollywood produces 500 movies. YouTube does that every 28 minutes. That's where the action is in the digital divide. We are the only race that waits for, we got black kids in the neighborhood waiting for mama to come home from work so they can get their hands on her cell phone and then they can go online and write their term paper. Why? Because you only got, what, one out of three African Americans with a computer with internet access, you know, in the home. Our libraries don't even stay open. What is a library in the black community? It's called Starbucks. And why do black kids go to Starbucks? Because they get free internet access. They get free Wi-Fi. You got black kids applying to colleges. There's another college, 3,725 colleges from NYU to the University of Hawaii, and not one of them takes paper. If you're going to apply to college, you got to go online. None of them takes paper. So you got black kids going to Starbucks, applying to colleges online because they don't have a computer in the home. Somebody has got to raise consciousness and smack us out of this crazy funk that we are in. Now I'm going to shut up and step back.
No. We definitely don't want you to step back.
You have no fire, brother.
You laid so much on us. Dr. Kimbrough, you touched on a lot, but But I want you to go back to this digital divide, because we're in an information age, but I'm hearing you say that we're not taking advantage of the information. What are some of the things that we should be doing?
We take advantage in the wrong way. There is no ethnic group more than black women. Go ahead and look at the data. Go to Nielsen. Google Nielsen, and they will give you all the data on anything that you want between Nielsen and the Census Bureau. No group except black females between the ages of 13 and 19 use more cell phone minutes. So I have no problem with that. Baby doll, if you got a cell phone and you want it, there's only two things you can do on that cell phone. Number one, you can gather information. I don't care what time of day that you boot on that cell phone, whether it's 2 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Are you ready for this? No matter what time you boot up, there are 2 billion other people online with you. Now, you can use that audience of 2 billion other people to share your idea, to share your vision, to start a business, to talk about your product or service, or you can use that 2 billion people to go ahead and gossip, and that's what we are doing. Now, I have no problem with that. If you got a cell phone and you want to go on Facebook and you want to go Real Housewives of Atlanta and you want to gossip, that's your business. You go do your business. I'm not here to judge people. I don't judge people. I relate to people. But I have a big problem when you're giving your money away to AT&T, to Sprint, and I have black kids walking into my class saying, "Dr. Kimbrough, I won't see you next semester." Why, baby doll? My mama can't afford the tuition. I got a big problem with that. You got to leverage that. So if you're going to spend your money with AT&T, well, damn it, I got to see some Verizon or AT&T scholars in my classroom. I got to see it. I got to see some Sprint scholars in my classroom. I got to see some T-Mobile scholars going to CAU on full ride in my classroom.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Sister Nadia, you had a question?
Yes, brother. Man, I have so many questions. The brother just kept dropping so much information, it's hard to select which one to expound on. But I wanted you to touch more on the inferiority complex that ideally our people suffer from, which makes them refuse to accept their own power base. What you're speaking on, or what I've gathered from what you're speaking on, is in order for the black community to truly enforce some political power, they have to first have power resources, ownership of land, production, means of production, property assets, etc., organizations. So if you can speak on how the corollary of blacks owning and using that power resource base to not only establish our nation state here, but reestablishing our motherland, Africa, how will that increase our power base and our nationhood?
Well, every other ethnic group has done that. Every other ethnic group has done that. And when you look at sub-Saharan Africa, that's what they're doing right now. I mean, like I told you, the Census Bureau, what is the Census Bureau predicting? Just like you got folks from all around, black folks from all around the country flocking to Atlanta. Girl, I'm going to Atlanta. Atlanta's got it going on, man. They say you get Atlanta on Monday and you can have a job on Tuesday. Well, and like I said, in the next decade, all that nonsense is going to disappear. They're not going to say, "I'm coming to Atlanta. Man, I'm going to Johannesburg. Man, I'm going to Lagos." Man, they said, man, they got it going in Kenya. Man, we have got to organize our capital. And it begins, Booker T. Washington said it years ago, start where you are with what you have, knowing that what you have is plenty enough. No one is going to do it for us. Now, you can walk hat in hand. You can say, "Oh, woe is me." Yeah, you can do all that, but no one's going to feel sorry for you. Now, there are 10 different forms of wealth. I explain it to my business students all the time. They make the mistake thinking that money is the only form of wealth. And I tell them, I said, money's not even number one. As a matter of fact, money is number three. And they said to me, "Dr. Kimbrough, how come money isn't number one? What is the number one form of money? The number one form of wealth is knowledge. And why is knowledge number one? Because the pocketbook can't grow until the mind grows. You take the word capitalism, and capitalism is not a dirty word. If you got a problem with capitalism, then you better go to Ghana. Then you better go to Nigeria. I mean, they have no problems with capitalism over there. You take the word capitalism, write it on a piece of paper. C-A-P-I-T-A-L-I-S-M. Take the Latin derivative of the word capitalism. C-A-P-U-T. Caput. Well, what does caput mean in Latin? It means head. What's the one thing you must use in order to survive in a free and open society? You must use your head. I mean, our society is not divided between rich versus poor or black versus white, liberal, conservative, Republican, Democrat, male versus female. Hell no. Our society is divided between dreamer versus non-dreamer. And people get in trouble in life not because they wanted too much. They get in trouble in life because they settled for too little. Where do ideas come from? An idea comes from your creator knocking on your subconscious, asking you, do you want more out of life? The average individual in our society gets 4 ideas a year, any one of which, if you had the guts, if you had the courage, if you had the fortitude to chase your dream, would make you financially independent. And all you got to do is look at Lisa Price, a Carol's daughter. I mean, over a 7-year period, I know that I interacted with minimum 1,000 black millionaires. When Martin Luther King led the Montgomery bus boycott in 1955, you had only 5 black millionaires in the United States. You got 35,000 today. You got 5 black billionaires today. But unlike other ethnic groups, we turn a deaf ear. We think, oh, they were lucky. Yo, you think they were lucky? You need to tell that to Dave Stewart, who's one of your 5 black billionaires. You need to tell that to Tyler Perry. I asked Tyler Perry, I said, Tyler, how in the world did you go from sleeping in your car in New Orleans and sleeping in your car in Atlanta, Georgia, to building a $45 million production studio? He said to me, nothing but the grace of God. I spent 2 days with Kathy Hughes, one of your black billionaires. When she bought her first radio station for the first year, she slept on the floor of that radio station in Washington, D.C., and down the hall of her radio station was a restroom. She and her son bathed in that restroom and ate off a hot plate every day. There I am with Bishop T.D. Jakes, and I'm in his book line study looking at every book on God's green earth that you ever want to read or study or examine in your life. And what in the world do we know about Bishop Jakes? Well, number one, they told him he would never make it in the ministry because he has a heavy lisp. Number two, he's a high school dropout. Yeah, he went back and got his GED, but the man never finished high school. And number three, they damn near ran him out of Charleston, West Virginia with only 3 members. But you look at Jakes right now. I mean, come on, 191,000 square foot, mega church, 30,000 members, $45 million budget. And I said to him,
right.
I said, Bishop, I'm not getting on that plane and flying back to Atlanta until we talk about wealth and prosperity. He says, that's easy. He said, give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. Teach him how to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. But show him how he can buy the pond and no one in his family will ever know struggle. Well, I'm telling your listeners today, hey, we got to buy the pond. Quit moaning. Quit begging. Quit complaining. Get up off your knees and buy the damn pond. You got the money, and all we need are a few good brothers. That's all we need. That's all we need. All grown up ain't afraid of nothing, brother. No, it's time to step forward and save my race, brother. Bathe the children. Get them ready for school the next day, brother.
Yes,
keep
sir.
Your butt at home because that's where you want to be, brother. Put the video game down and, damn it, read a book, brother. Never call a black woman out of her name, brother. Attend the PTA meeting, brother. All we need are a few good brothers. Now, listen, I've been married 42 years to the same sister. And I know everybody's not going to be married, and sometimes mom and daddy got to go their separate ways, but that doesn't change a thing. I'm talking about a brother who will pay the child support, pay it on time, in the right amount, with a little extra thrown in, brother. That's what we need right now, and no one's going to do that for us but us.
Yes, sir. I agree with
That's
you
real.
In your analysis of the overabundance of black wealth, the billionaires that exist amongst us here and abroad. But my brother, I ask you in dialectically, how do you answer to the reverse of that? Because this sounds like the old argument or debate of white capitalism versus black capitalism. And ideally, in the black revolutionary analysis, there really can truly never be any black capitalism because we don't own or control social, political, economic means of production in order to subjugate an entire.
Yeah, well, you don't need that.
But
you don't need to control that.
I'm not saying
you don't need to control that. All you need to do is control the means of production. That's all you need to control.
What I'm asking you, brother, is
what
I'm asking you is how do we get our people to not focus on that word capitalism, which what I just explained has traumatized our people into having a reactionary mentality, and basically we have an acceptance of, it's like this, during the church establishment of slavery, they made us believe it was a divine thing to accept slavery, so we feel holier than thou if we sacrifice ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
when we hear capitalism, we almost think that in order for us to seek possessions or claim wealth and stability and financial security, that is something that we should not do because it's
the bottom line.
We need a culture back, brother.
Yeah.
Culturally, how do you answer the economic question of the black man and woman here in America?
Because
let
me tell you, here's the formula for wealth, and I want you to burn it in your subconscious and share it to all your friends that tweet it, whatever you do. Here is the formula for wealth. Q plus Q plus MA equals C. The quality of your service plus the quantity of your service plus the mental attitude in which it is rendered always equals compensation. Service is the price you pay for the space that you occupy, and anybody can serve. Now, I know that we come from different religious backgrounds, but the book that I read, and I read them all, the Torah, the Talmud, the Quran, I read them all. But who will be the greatest among you? Your greatest server, those who serve the most. And that formula will never wane. That formula will never go out of style. But the opposite will get you confused, and we have been confused for so long. The opposite is that somebody else will take care of you. You don't have to serve. As a matter of fact, you don't even have to work. I'll take care of you. You can just sit up, and you can have all the children that you want. And you can, listen, I'll give you a house, and I'll put you in a little apartment, and I will give you all the trappings, and I'll give you food, shelter, and clothing, and you don't have to do anything else to earn it. That's the opposite of that, and that never works, and that's what we have been bought into. And that's what the three greatest social ills ever heaped on the back of my race have all come from the federal government. Number one, slavery. Number two, Jim Crow. And number three, the welfare state. That burden has been placed on our back. Now, how in the world did Africa go from colonialism to socialism, to emerging markets? They threw those shackles off left and right. They're saying, oh, my God, look at the oil. I mean, I don't care if you go to Nigeria. I don't care whether you go to Zambia. I don't care whether you go to Tanzania. I don't care whether you go to Angola. I don't care whether you go to Cape Verde Islands. And you look at all the natural resources there. That's how they changed that. Now, you got five black billionaires in the United States. You got 16 in Africa, and they are making their voices heard. As a matter of fact, I was in Chicago about 3 weeks ago on a panel. They brought me in on a panel with a sister. This is one of the baddest sisters in the planet in Nigeria. She owns her own oil company. You need to check her out. Falaruza Alakajia, bad sister. She ain't even 50 years old. You want to get on her level. Well, you got to speak her language. And what is her language? Girlfriend doesn't lose money. She's got too many things to do. She got people to educate. She's got to build institutions. She's one of the 16 black billionaires in Africa, and she's making a difference. Flew in from Nigeria on her own private jet, brought her entourage with her. She said, no, you don't send me a commercial airline ticket. I come in on my own jet. Now, the problem is, if she walked into your studio right now, would you know her? And I'm speaking rhetorically. That's the problem.
Right.
That's the problem.
It's good teaching.
646-478-4447, 646-478-4447. We're talking to Dr. Dennis Kimbrough. We're talking about unlocking the black genius. I've got to get into your book and some other topics here. Doctor, tell us about now this work you have with Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. Now, you have basically you've given it in a way that I guess we can take it, or give us your spin on it. I know I'm familiar with Think and Grow Rich, and I'm familiar with your work, but what made you get into the work Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice?
Well, it wasn't, you know, that W. Clement Stone, he sought me out. You see, I was going around the country interviewing successful African-Americans for a book that I was writing, which turned out to be What Makes the Great Great. And I had all types of articles and interviews because this was like the first self-help book strictly for African-Americans. And he caught wind of what I was doing. He called me up. I didn't call him. He called me up and said, young man, when can you come to Chicago? I would like to meet you. And me and my wife flew to Chicago. I didn't have the slightest idea what this man had in mind. And I walked into his palatial office in the suburbs of Chicago, and he said to me, you're not the first person to go around the country interviewing successful African-Americans. And I said, I'm not. And we're going back to 1983. And he said, no. And he reached across his credenza, pulled out the last 100 written pages of Napoleon Hill. I got it in my study. I'm looking at it right now. And dropped it in my lap. He said, I got a proposition for you, young man. I said, what is that? He said, based on what I see in here, we want you to finish, complete, and update a book. I said, what book? He said, the book that's in your lap, the last 100 written pages of Napoleon Hill. And I told him originally, I told him, no, I couldn't do that. And he said, why not? I said, I'm working on a book of my own. He said, you need to push your book aside and finish this. Then I said, well, if I wanted to do that, I need some type of financial help, man. I'm dead broke. I've been doing this full time. My wife is an accountant. I've been living off of her earnings. I said, if you give me some type of financial help, you know, I'll consider it. He said, no, I'm not going to give you any financial help. No one gave Napoleon Hill any financial help. But he said, if you really want to find the answers why one person succeeds while another fails, why is one individual rich and wealthy while another is impoverished, it is in this laboratory that you must find it. To this day, I am so glad that he put me to the test like that. Yeah, I love you. Hey, there were times that my lights, water, electricity was cut off. I almost lost my house on 5 different occasions. I did lose 2 cars in the process. But let me tell you something right now, my brother. I can go anywhere, and I've been all over the world. I've been to Singapore. I've been to Australia. I've been to Iceland. You name it, I've been there. I've been to Australia. You name it, I've been, and I can look anybody in the eye. And the only reason why anybody would come out to hear me speak, yeah, Dennis, it worked for you, but will it work for me? You see, these are universal principles.
That's
what do you mean by universal? Universe. One verse. One song. Regardless of color. Regardless of gender. Regardless of ethnicity. And that's what we have got to do as a race. No, like I said, no one's going to do anything for us. Look, it took your president 6 years to acknowledge that we got to do something about black males. Do you know how many times I'm in prison speaking? As soon as you go in prisons, I've had brothers who were incarcerated left and right. He said, Doc, the only 3 people that we read in here, we read Farrakhan, we read Drake's, and we read you. Those are only 3 people that we read, man. I said, well, I'd be more impressed if you read it on the other side of the fence rather than on this side. But I love you, my brother. We have got to make some changes. Going back to Booker T. Washington, and let me tell you something. Martin Luther King and W.B. Du Bois, they were barely on speaking terms. They butt heads all the time. They were barely on speaking terms because Du Bois didn't think that King pushed economic development enough. You see, Du Bois wanted to march in Washington in the 1930s. King had it in August 28th, 1963. And when Du Bois died the day before the March on Washington, and don't you know, my brother, they didn't even give a moment of silence for this prolific scholar.
Teach. Crazy.
Yeah,
crazy.
It's beyond crazy. It's beyond crazy. But thank God we are making changes. And like I said, what we need a cadre of dreamers, man. We need dreamers. There's only 2 qualities that you need if you're going to make it, and you're going to make it big. You need innovation, and you need creativity. What in the hell is creativity? The ability to come up with an idea. I took a shower this morning before I went up on campus. I got 50 million ideas in that shower. But you also need innovation. And what is innovation? The ability to execute that idea. You see, anybody can see down the street. I can walk down Peachtree Street. I can walk up and down that campus, and I can look at the young folks. Oh, they're wearing this type of, you know, attire, and the ladies are dressed that way. See, anybody can spot a trend. But what we need today, we need folks who can see around the corner. We need some folks who can create a trend, who can seize the trend. That's what Damon John, when I interviewed Damon John, I said, Damon, if you had to do it all over again, what would you do? He said, man, I would have gone to college, got my degree in marketing. I said, what was the defining moment in your life? What was the high water mark in your life? He said, when I had to burn the furniture. I said, what do you mean burn the furniture? He said, well, when I finally got financing from Samsung, I went out and I hired all these seamstresses, and they showed up on my mother's house with all their equipment, and I didn't have any place to put their equipment. So I took all the furniture out of my mother's house, put it in the backyard, and set it on fire. Did you hear what I said, my brother? That's faith.
Yes, sir.
You see, it starts off at belief. Then when you see somebody else do it, it turns into faith. But when you have the knowledge, it turns into spirit. And that's the track that we got to run on. Belief, faith, and spirit. We got to expose the next generation. Enough is enough.
That's what I'm talking about. You sound like Dr. Khalid Muhammad in his last lecture when he said, enough Negro stuff. Revolution is the only solution. Doc, talk to us about the quote-unquote ghetto mentality, or what we see in many of our urban areas, what they call the hood mentality, because a lot of times the youngsters, their intellect or light is there, but the environment seems to snuff out their drive. How do they rise up, or what can we do to overcome that?
Well, you're looking at the lowest form of achievement. You see, the lowest form of achievement is survival. You know, I go into the neighborhood and I speak to the brothers, what's up, man? I'm just trying to make it. Man, if I had your hand, I'd throw mine in. Man, I'm a squirrel in your world. I'm just trying to find enough. Man, I'm day to day, man. You see, that's survival. But the highest point of survival is called legacy. You see, when it's all said and done, what will others say about you? And what we got to do, we got to get off of survival, and we got to take the light off ourselves and put it on the next generation. You see, when I interviewed John Johnson of Ebony Magazine, and I interviewed this man twice, and there I am in his offices before he died, and I said, Mr. Johnson, can we talk about success and achievement? He says, well, you know, success and achievement is like a relay race. I said, what do you mean, Mr. Johnson? He said, a relay race isn't won or lost on how fast the runners are. A relay race is won or lost on how capable one runner can pass the baton from one to the next. And he said, in Black America, we got fastest runners in the world. In lane number one, we got Colin Powell. In lane number two, we got Oprah Winfrey. In lane number three, we got, Michelle Obama. Men and women who have run the race of their lives. Now, they're coming around this final turn, coming down this straightaway, holding this baton called success, leadership, and achievement. But we got to make sure that the next generation is fit, focused, ready to run the race of their lives. And I'm not so sure we've done that. Now, everybody on Clark Atlanta's campus knows my classroom. Why do they know that my classroom? Because I got a sign on my door. And you know what that sign reads? That sign says, if you don't want to work hard, you don't belong here. And if you don't want to lead, under no circumstances, walk through my door. Then if you have the guts, if you got the temerity, if you got the ganas, if you got the fortitude to actually step into my classroom, the first thing you do when you turn to the right, you see another sign on that wall. And that says, mediocrity is not the standard in this class. Now, you can be mediocre someplace else, but damn it, you can't be mediocre here. Why? This is the standard, my brother. I will never, listen, I don't demand excellence. I insist upon excellence. Now, who taught me that? Percy Sutton, who was Malcolm X's personal attorney when I interviewed him years ago. You never lower your standards. You never lower the bar. You just show the brothers and sisters how they can clear the bar and help them. I'll never lower the bar. Because if I lower the bar, I'll wipe you out.
Go ahead.
I'll wipe you out.
Go ahead. What I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. We'll take a couple phone calls here. We also, Sister Nadia, if you got a question, jump right on in because I hear you. Let's go to the first call here. Eric Cole, 504-432. 504-432. You're on live with Black Power Radio. And Dr. Dennis Kimbrough, talk to us. We're talking about unlocking the black genius. Black Power, welcome.
Black Power. Brother Dennis Kimbrough, matter of fact, I had your book, Think and Grow Rich, from a black choice, but I'm going to have to go and buy that again. I see you and I'm going to have to go buy it again. You and Dr. Claude Anderson opened up my eyes to the economic situation amongst blacks. Now, this is a question that I want to say about the genes. I really believe, do you believe they should have people like you, yourself, and Claude Anderson to bring that genius out of some of our people?
Well, genius is innate. It was given to you upon birth. All you got to do is step into the light, because when you step into the light, two things happen. When you step into the light, you're going to raise consciousness, and when you raise consciousness, you're going to raise your standard of living. I mean, what did your Lord and Savior say? If I be lifted up, I draw all men and women unto me. He's not talking about physical. Turn your back on the physical and look at the mental. The Bible says the first shall be last and the last shall be first. What the hell does that mean? Well, we live in a society that values the physical. Until I see the BMW, until I see the $300,000 house, until I see the Air Jordans, I won't believe it. Well, the Bible says the physical that you have first, put last, and the mental that you have last, put first. Because everything occurs to you twice in life. First the inner, then the outer. First the thought, then the thing. First the mental, and then the physical. And that's what we have got to do. We put too much emphasis on the physical. And you look at our buying habits. Everything's about the physical. I mean, you look at black males. Black males are 6% of the population. We buy more than 1 out of 5 pairs of Nike shoes that they manufactured. Did you hear what I said? We are 6% of the population. We buy more than 20% of Nike shoes. Now, I'm not saying if you want to buy Nikes and the Air Jordan and LeBron James, be my guest. Hey, I'll give you a ride to Foot Locker. Go in there, buy all the shoes that you want. But I have a problem when I interviewed Harry Johnson. See, we don't even know who Harry Johnson is. He's the brother who raised the $120 million for the King Memorial. And it took him 7 years to raise the $120 million. And when I interviewed him and he told me who gave to that memorial and who didn't, now I got a problem. Soon as he took control of the King Memorial, General Motors stepped to the table and gave $10 million. He asked Tommy Hilfiger for $5 million. Hilfiger said, I'm not going to give you $5 million. I'm going to give you $6.5 million. Toyota gave $2 million. Honda gave $2 million. But are you ready for this? Nike and Adidas didn't give him a dime. Nike and Adidas told him no.
Man.
When you buy 20% of those shoes, and then they're going to tell you no? Black women, you are 6% of the population. You buy 27% of all shoes and cologne manufactured here in the United States. Now, I got 3 daughters. I don't tell them what to buy and how to spend the money. Go ahead. I have no problem. But if you're going to buy the red bottom shoes, the red bottom shoes, some of the kids who walk in my classroom got to be going to school on the red bottom shoe academic scholarship 4-year full ride. Every other ethnic group does that. We don't do it. We are 6% of the population. We buy more than 30% of movie theater tickets. More than 30% of movie theater tickets. How many kids are walking into my classroom on the Warner Brothers Scholarship?
No.
How many kids in my classroom on the King Gates Scholarship?
No.
How many kids are going to graduate the second week of May and they had a full ride, 4-year Universal Studio Scholarship?
No.
You look foolish, and no one wants to look foolish. You look foolish. I don't want you to look foolish. Every other ethnic group does that. And they'll do it. They'll tell you to a face. You think I'm kidding? Go ahead and start a business in the Asian community and tell me the results of it. Just walk into the Asian community and tell them you're going to start a hair care business.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be lucky to be lucky to come out in one piece.
Mm.
It's real talk.
No one wants to look foolish.
Mm-hmm.
Will you raise your level of vision? You see with your mind's eye, my brother, because your physical eye will lie to you. If we stood on railroad tracks and we looked down the tracks, the train tracks, you would say, Dr. Kimbrough, looks like the tracks are coming together. But the tracks never come together, otherwise the train would fall off the tracks. You come to Georgia and let's go to Savannah and look out across the Atlantic Ocean. You would say, man, it looks like the sky and the water meet. Well, the sky and the water never meets because there'd be no such thing as gravity if the sky and the water meet. You see, those are two examples of your physical eye lying to you. When you get a dream and you get a vision and you say, damn it, enough is enough. This I will do, this I will have, this I will become. The revolution starts right now. See with your mind's eye.
Ashe.
Yes, sir, brother. Did that answer your question?
Oh, I want to say this too.
Sure.
Does he plan on writing a book with Claude Anderson? Claude Anderson hooking up.
Yeah, that would be a good idea, man. I'm working on book number 6 right now, so only so many hours in the day, my brother. That sounds like a good idea, but there's enough. I try to leave a legacy between. I've written 5 books between Think and Grow Rich, a Black Choice. And the wealth choice, we just got to spread it. Got to put those books in as many hands as possible. Thanks for the call, my brother.
All right, I'm going to go get that book again now.
Oh, I love you so much. You hang in there, my brother.
All right, my brother.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that call. We'll go to another call here. Eric Code is 314-650, 314-650. You're on live. This is Black Power Radio. We're talking to Dr. Dennis Kimbrough, and we're talking about unlocking the black genius. Talk to us. Welcome. Get into it. Black Power. Call 314-650. You there? Might have lost signal. Next call here, area code is 765-717-765-717. You're on live. This is Black Power Radio, Unlocking the Black Genius. Dr. Dennis Kimbrough, talk to us. We're trying to get to it. Black Power.
Hey, what's going on, Brother Quality? This is Brother Wise, man. What's happening?
Hey, Brother Wise.
Hey, it's a real coincidence that I just so happened to get on this call because you're on the phone with it, like you got a brother on the line. You know, I was going to Clark Atlanta University. Things didn't work out, but my question to the brother is, I'm going to school in a predominantly white area. My college, I go to Ball State University, and it's really a lack of Afrocentricity or you know our culture. And what I did was I went and got me some cocoa beads with a black fish on them, and I went and got me some other decorative African things, and I started walking around with this on, and I get a bad vibe from these white people up here. But how do I get these brothers and sisters that's in college, the ones that I got a hold of and they really want to organize with me, how do I get their mind state focused on being all the way indulged in our culture and not being afraid of it in front of these white folks? Because in my area, it's more to them than it is us.
Yeah, well, you can't control that. You got to be the change that you want to be. You got to be the catalyst. You can't worry about who's siding with you or who's in your camp or on your side. You can't worry about that. You have got to be the change. You know, the first thing I do, the first class, and one thing you will never find about me. Okay, I've been teaching. I've been at Clark Atlanta since '92. And you will never find any of the books that I've written on my syllabus. I'm not there to hawk books on my students. Now, my students will go to the bookstore. They'll get all my books. Come, Dr. Kimmer, will you autograph this for my mama, for my auntie? Okay, that's fine. Now, I've written business cases, and I always use my cases, But I'm not there to hawk books with my students. So the first day of class, what's the first handout I give my students after the syllabus? I give them the four greatest prayers. And I get business students, what's it got to do with business? I said, not a damn thing. But years from now, when you chase your dream, I don't care whether you're going to become an entrepreneur or a corporate climber, and life knocks you to your knees, here is food for the journey. Then number two, I tell everybody, pull out a piece of paper and write down the number 30 on that piece of paper, and I want you to look at it day in and day out. And what's the number 30? That's Martin Luther King. Over the course of his adult life, this man averaged 30 racial prank-filled phone calls every day of his life. The phone would ring, he would pick it up. Nigga, I'm going to kill you. Hang it up. The phone ring, he would pick it up. Nigga, I know where you live. Hang it up. The phone ring. 30 prank-filled, but it never stopped him. It never stopped him. So you've got to be the change, and you can't control that. You can't. You know, the subtitle to both of my books, Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice and The Wealth Choice. There are 50 million different choices that you can make on a daily basis. You can choose what time you're going to eat lunch, who you're going to eat lunch with, what you're going to wear, what station you're going to watch the game tonight. 99.9% of these choices you can turn your back on, you don't have to address. But there are two choices that you must face as soon as your feet hit the ground first thing in the morning. Number one, you can accept the circumstances as they are. Or number two, you can take the responsibility to change them. And what I found over the course of my research on my books, those men and women who have won mostly in life have relied mostly on themselves. They made the choice. And I parade successful men and women in front of my students all the time. You know who spoke in my class last week? I had three individuals speak to my students last week. Number one, Dikembe Mutombo. You may or may not know him. You might have seen the Geico commercials. You know he played in the NBA. Dikembe Mutombo. Now you say, oh, Dr. Kimbrough, he's an athlete. No, he went to Georgetown on an academic scholarship. After his freshman year, John Thompson approached him and told him to try out for the team. He's 7'2". He said, you ever play basketball? He said, no, not really. I'm here, and I'm a pre-med student. He said, try out for the team. You might make it. And he made the team. Do you know the businesses that he owns? He shared his portfolio with my students. Do you know what's in his portfolio? He said, you got to go long and far in inner city Atlanta, all these hospitals. Find me a hospital in Atlanta that I don't own the ambulances that go in and out of those emergency rooms. He said, I own oil wells in Nigeria. I built schools in Nigeria. I built a hospital in Kinshasa. He said, I own 34% of the African Channel, which is equal to BET here in the United States. And he says, the only reason why I was able to accomplish that, I made a choice to do it. My brother, I have got to get off this line and take care of some business. Promise me you'll have me back on your radio show.
Oh, yes, sir. Without a shadow of a doubt, without a shadow of a doubt, you've dropped so much, Doctor. We're going to be marinating on that for some days.
Okay.
But give us some parting words and make sure that you give us the links, the website, and how we can contact you to get your book and information.
Okay. The website, www.denniskimbrough.com. The books, The Wealth Choice, Success Secrets of Black Millionaires. You can go to Barnes & Noble. You can go to Amazon. You can go to your black bookstores and get it. And I got to say this, man, come on. I don't care whether you have to fax, tweet, go online, call three of your closest friends, ask them, have you read The Wealth Choice? If not, why not? Of course, Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice. And, what I want to learn, what I want to tell you, man, is that what I said earlier, believe, conceive, and achieve, those are the principles, those are the universal principles that everybody has used. Brother, sister, I love you. You are making a difference. I am honored to be on your radio show. Let's keep the momentum going. God bless and take care.
Yes,
same
God
to you,
bless
Doctor.
You. Love. I give thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Love
Bye-bye.
You too, and appreciate your time with us. Black power, peace and blessings. Brothers and sisters, that was Dr. Dennis Kimbrough live, Black Power Radio. And I mean, literally, he dropped about, I'm going to say, three books worth of information in a short span of time. Sister Nadia, your thoughts, what'd you get?
I have several thoughts because you know how I am. I'm always thinking dialectically. And from what I heard, this brother really gave an antithesis to the inferiority complex that people continue to suffer from. The thing that we have to implement is the meiotic balance of communal economics and finding a way to reverse the pseudo-capitalist mentality of hoarding our economics, individualizing our resources, and privatizing our support away from the black community. All the keys to success, prosperity, and protracted wealth, these are things that the black community has no concept of because it has been alienated away from us. It has been kept away from us, even though we are the forefathers and mothers of wealth, intelligence, culture, technology, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm just still building on several of the concepts that he broke down. One of the main things that stuck out to me, Conrad, is how the schools, over his position in the school, how he enforces the disciplines. You know, we were speaking on earlier the black genius within, and what he was saying is our genius in economics has been used against us and has been used to continue the success of the powers that be. What we need to do now here is teach our people to use our natural talents to enforce our economic power base to redevelop Africa, redevelop our mind states, and redefine ourselves in our original state of power. We got to get back to our king and queendom, and we can only do that through collective social, political, military, and economic power, because you can't borrow bullets.
No, definitely. And I mean, he as I said, he dropped so much. I wanted, you know, we always tweet during the show, the National Minister of Information tweets and puts this information out, and you all make sure you retweet them and put that hashtag Black Power Radio. But something that stuck out to me on that, he said that we, talking about us as black people, he said we buy more than 20% of Nike shoes, yet when it came time to tribute a man like Dr. Martin Luther King, whether you agree with his tactics or not, put down a hell of a struggle and made a hell of a sacrifice to advance us in many strategic ways, and even especially organizing the poor people strikes and all that towards the end. And when approached, when the guy approached Nike and Adidas, they wouldn't give him one dime. I mean, that's heavy. We spending all this money all the time, as he said, trying to have the latest fashion, the red bottoms, the this, the that, and everything that's marketed on television to us and radio. But then when you come to them with these causes, 9 times out of 10, they tell you, hell no, that's something that got to seriously be looked at in the black community and in the black nation. And we got to really make some serious choices on where we're going to put our money at, what we're going to spend, what we're going to buy, what we're going to consume, what we're going to make, because we're going to withdraw our dollars and resources from many of these companies that don't support black causes.
Exactly.
Fair point.
I mean, that is one of the easiest but highly detrimental to the economic power base of this machine that is governing over our people. I was just actually looking at the same post as you were speaking on it. Us buying Nike shoes may be a funny taboo and somewhat of a joke, but that is only a symptom and one of thousands of symptoms that we suffer from, our mental retardation from slavery and our psychological, emotional defense mechanism against capitalism.
Can I say something?
Sure. Yes, sir.
I noticed that, when I was young, man, you had the thing going on with Timberland, Tommy Hilfiger, and all those other clothing lines, right? Now, I was on Facebook one day, and I was on this one page that these one brothers had made, and there was this brother on there. He was promoting his shoe company, and he was black. His shoe was called Ballers, but it wasn't a typical Nike Jordan type. Nobody liked it. Like, he didn't have no likes on it. I liked it, just the fact that he was making his own shoe. But basically, like, when brothers and sisters, like, we got black companies that make black clothes. May not be our favorite people, may not be our favorite celebrity, but just like Martin Luther King had a path that he walked for his people, these same celebrities and these same people is walking the path for black people. And we not buying into what they getting because you got the media and other entities out here just out here hating on anything that black people do. It's like my mom's was telling me about this white cat that had got caught on a phone call, and he was like, "Yo, we gotta stop niggas from making money." Like, and it's so serious, man. Like, we all gotta get each other into this struggle, man. Because if we don't, man, it's so bad. Like, the school that I go to, man, I went and got these the black kids are scared of me, yo. They won't talk to me. The young brothers, I'll be like, "Yo, what's happening?" They keep walking. They go, they like, I might be, it's bad, man. We got to get a hold of our people, yo.
Yes, sir.
It's bad, and it's depressing me. I get depressed.
Brother,
I leave my house,
brother,
and I have to make myself leave. It's hard, yo. It is so hard. It's so hard. We got to get our people back, man. We got to, because I'm tired of seeing my niggas walking around with tight ass jeans on. Straight up.
Right. And you live here in Atlanta, so you deal with the same thing that I did with, brother. So I overstand.
Nah, I live in Indiana. I went to Clark Atlanta University. But you see, the thing is, when I was down there, I didn't get no bad vibe from the black people. The black people up here, yo, it's this one lady's ice cream shop. Her name is Miss Betty. And they wanted to put a Subway there or something. But one day I was walking through there while I was registering for school, and I stopped her and I asked her, you know, if she had any applications. And she was like, "Well, no, we're family business." You know, and I respected that, you know. So I walked off and I was like, "Well, cool, you know, maybe I could bring some of my nieces and little cousins up here to get some ice cream." Well, the next time I walked past there, she wasn't there. They was closing it down, and they was building a club. Well, the club was like, it's always been up the street, but it was like right across the street from my house where they tore that down and put some apartments there, right? Well, the club is where Miss Betty's ice cream shop is at. So, you know, 6-7 months passed by, and I wasn't even paying it no attention. Well, I go to the newspaper stand, and I pull the newspaper out the newspaper stand, and some white boys done ransacked their shop, not once, but twice. And you know what? They got a Subway there over there right now. You know how bad I want to go burn it down right now?
Brother, I'm going to tell you this, and this is the answer to your frustrations. It's the answer to everything that we're speaking on. And the only solution is Black Revolution. And you can take that for rhetoric, but that is the God-honest reality of the black situation. Everybody wants to be a nigga, but nobody wants to be a nigga, to quote Paul Hooney. You cannot claim and want and desire black economics, but not claim and want to be the origins of black, which is African. The only way we can counteract the symptoms, the retardation, the distortion and disruption of our natural state of consciousness, which is divine balance. Our natural state of being is prestigious and holds in high priority the prosperity and sustainability of our lifestyle, our culture, our nation, our ethics, and our morality. We have to get to the root of the problem, brother. The only reason why black businesses or black marketing tools or black products do not get supported is because we don't buy black because we don't want to be black. Ask yourself this: historically, the most famous African so-called American inventors or business entrepreneurs were who? Black people who invented things to make black people look or be what? Closer to or be what? Europeanized, to be Europeanist, to look and be and feel more European, therefore so-called accepted and validated by white capitalist, white supremacy society. So what I'm telling you, brother, is none of this works. We can lay out as many tactics of unifying economics and buying black products as we want to. We can boycott all day and refuse to spend our money with every single store outside our community. But if we do not know who to spend that money with, if we do not accept the value in black, not just black life, but black intellectual property, black imagination and inventive concepts, black ability and black dominance in creation. That is the only way we will be able to truly survive, brother. Until then,
so
you
where
will
do
continue
we start,
to be
though? What, I mean, where do we start? Because, like, the story I just told you about the ice cream shop, I went and said something to my cousin, and he was like, nigga, I'm going to tell you the exact words. Because you had to get the fuck out of here with that bullshit, cuz. Because we don't support black around here, nigga. So you might take your punk ass back to Cali. It was his exact words, huh?
Well, you also about to understand this. The great revolutionary woman Harriet Tubman said one thing. She said, I freed hundreds and thousands of slaves, and I would have freed more if they would have knew they were slaves. So you will come to the inevitable acceptance that we will not free all of our people here mentally, socially, physically, economically, or spiritually, but you will continue to do what you can. You start from where you are right now in acceptance and creating the tactic that pulls together the black economic consciousness in your immediate neighborhood. If you cannot organize a boycott of a local liquor store or the Arabs or the goddamn Chevron, then you aren't angry enough. Everything that you've spoken on here tonight is only an idea, but an idea is the spark of change of the world. What you have to do now is put action behind your idea, brother, and do not be discouraged, because please believe, your discouragement is a teardrop in the ocean of struggle of all our ancestors. We are all tired, but we all have a divine obligation and responsibility to do our part in the destruction and eradication of white superior power structures.
Let me say this too. Now, before you hang up, let me say this though. On that you know, as people change, brother. Just because that's what that black man is now. You say that's your cousin. Just because that's where your cousin is now. You know, that's not necessarily where he's going to be later. People grow at different lengths, brother, you know. So, I mean, that's his perspective right now because of where his mindset is and his mentality is. But as you and others and the environment and society and things keep chiseling away, I mean, inevitably that concrete breaks, brother. You know, I was one of those. You might have been one of those. Sister Nadia was one of those at a time. We was like, man, we don't want to hear that. Get that out of my face. You know what I mean? But at a certain time when the conditions is right and that right word, that situation, whatever it is, cracks that concrete, it busts your head wide open. And he ain't no different. And it's not a black man or woman that's in North America that's different in that regard. We've just been socialized in different fashions and colonized in different fashions. And we grow at different rates. But really, that's your test from your God and your ancestors to find out if you sincere about your mission. Just because you run up, you know, what if Mike Tyson gave up, you know, at the first time he felt pain as he was doing a crunch, or Jordan gave up the first time the basketball didn't go directly in the hoop as he tried to shoot a free throw. Everybody, as Dr. Kimbrough was talking about, everybody who is successful, brother, has to overcome levels of difficulty. And so when your family ultimately normally will be the most difficult people to deal with, because they know you. They know you as, you know, the little boy who had snot on his nose at a particular point wants some ice cream. You know what I'm saying? So, you know what I mean? So you got to look at it like that. You can't give up if you're sincere about the liberation of your people just because one brother or some people say, man, we don't want to hear that right now. You just got to be wise and be like, all right, I get back at you, cuz. Holler at me a little later on. You got to use tact. You know what I mean? But all the time you're getting that word in there.
Detroit Red said the same thing when he was stepped to by the FOI brothers, but he eventually became Malcolm X and ultimately Malik El-Haj Shabazz, brother. So consciousness evolves in stages. You just have to continue to do your part, and we master ones we can.
Word.
I got a strong goal here in Ball State, and I'm not going to give up, man. I'm probably probably gonna take this to my grave, you know what I mean, with my blackness, and hopes
can't give
that
up.
One of my nieces and my nephews catch on to what I, you know, what I'm doing, and they run with it. Brother Kweli helped me up a lot. He woke me up a lot, man. I want to thank y'all for the conversation to let me get on the air and riff raff, whatever. No, no, but thanks, man. Y'all take it easy, man. Black power.
Appreciate you, Black Power. Send the greetings to the fam. Send the greetings to mom. Black power to you.
Right. Hey, mom, right. Listen to the show now, Kweli, man. She on the show now, man.
That's what I. Mom, we appreciate you, mom. You raised a strong warrior. Thank you so much.
Right, right. She probably heard that. She probably going to call me sometime. She's going to hear that, but y'all take it easy, man.
All right, brother. That's what I'm talking about. Let me go to another call. Your area code is 678-670. 678-670. You're on live with Black Power Radio. We're talking about unlocking the black genius. Welcome, and Black Power, come into discussion. Go ahead.
Black Power, brother.
Black Power, Black Power.
Yes, sir, brother. First, I just want to say, you know, unlocking the black genius is easy. Just giving them an example. I'm in the Nation of Islam under the leadership of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And, you know,
right,
every money now, we've been going out of, like Islam, God. So we go out in the field. We went out in the field today to Clark Atlanta, college campus. Mm-hmm. And you see just about everything. Well, I mean everything and everything. And it's our mere presence out there alter the very nature of the thinking of the people. Just going out there with the people, you know, unlike attracts and like repels. So they are naturally attracted to a black man. A black man, a thin, clean cut. You ain't never seen nothing like that. You used to people calling you niggas. So when I come up, you say, "Peace, God, how you doing today, God?" They say, "I'm God." Now you got an opportunity to break it down. And after you show them that, you got to be consistent and then show them something. Give them something to hang on to. Black people, you got to give. I really don't like using this, but, you know, Jesse, he said some real truth. He said, "Keep hope alive."
Mm-hmm.
And you got to keep hoping our people to do the right thing. And I heard the brother, you know, they're just natural. You know, I say it like this. It says in the Holy Quran that struggle is ordained. But through struggle and fire, you become better. So God
That's
is
right.
just bringing that brother through a state of perfection. So overnight, you're going to see a mighty warrior like the great Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad. You know, I'm in
Absolutely.
The Nation of Islam. His brother was in the Nation. I tell you, we were just talking about it in Atlanta. I was telling a brother, brother from Chi-Rat, Chicago, and the brother brought up Dr. Khalid. I said, "Brother, I love Dr. Khalid. I never met Dr. Khalid. I just listened to a YouTube video, the goddamn white man. I fell in love with the brother."
Yes, sir.
So I just want to keep the spirit. You know, we got to keep the spirit alive and be among our people. We got to be real sincere and consistent because our people are looking for change, and the only way change is going to come is we get up and do it because the white man sure ain't going to do it.
I
just want to say I love you, brother.
I love you.
And I just want to leave you with the greetings. As-salamu alaykum.
Well, black man. Black power to you. And what you're saying is real. And that's what I was saying at the beginning of the show. I was saying when I was mentioning our great heroes and sheroes, when you get to talking about the greats like the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Farrakhan, you're talking about some master psychologists and some generals who knew how to pick black people up, making us feel good about ourselves, but putting us to work at the same time. And that's what I'm trying to say, that it can't just be a thing of intellectual masturbation where we're just feeling good because we know some words, or we know some books. It's got to be a thing where you feel good about yourself, you know who you are, but you're going to work too. That's what I'm saying about this genius. When you're talking about geniuses only know they geniuses because they are trying to solve a problem. They're going to work against the grain or against what the issue is, and they wrestling with that thing. You know what I mean? So brothers say unlocking the black genius is easy. I agree. The doctors say that the genius is innate in us. I agree. So it's just a thing of actualization. It's a thing of recognition. You want to say something, sister, spokeswoman?
Yes, sir. I'm in direct agreement with you, brother. I mean, it is historically proven that our culture is the basis for all the scientific disciplines, the very literary or what they call liberating arts, liberal arts that they make you study in the so-called institutions of higher learning of Western society were all founded and based off ancient Kemetic educational systems. The mere proven fact, if you look at the word chemistry and if you look at the word alchemy, they are based with what? The word chem, which means the Greek philosophers knew subconsciously they had to pay homage to the sciences that they learned and then stole and took back to their own civilizations and brought back in an oppressive weapon and a colonial tool to subjugate the intelligent minds of the created warriors that they were faced upon the shores of Africa, sir. I stand on my statement that I said earlier, and I'll say it, and I'll continue to say it until I get off the air. If we do not redeem our culture, comrade, we will never be able to have the balance that you're speaking on. The very thing that you just said, that we have ideas and tactics that we strategize and dream on through the night and wake up and go work, maybe for a person who is mentally inferior than us. But we continue to do these things because we believe inherently in ourselves and in a divine format, a schematic that is within our bodies and makes up our character and makes up our ability to develop civilizations over time. There is no so-called scholar or intellectual in any part of the world who did not learn their particular discipline in the universities of ancient Africa, from Socrates to Aristotle. So we have to not just claim black power in name and cloth and paper and economic stability. We must claim black power in cultural fortification, thus execution. There we'll be able to spread black dollars and redevelop ourselves. There's no way Jay-Z or Beyonce will spend black dollars with black people if they don't know or accept that they're black, if they don't accept their attachment and belong to Africa. We have to extend ourselves back. I was just rereading Amos Wilson when he was saying the very means of black survival has to be based off of all of our efforts directing ourselves to the reestablishment and redevelopment of Africa. He stated this very vehemently. We have to redevelop Africa and retie ourselves to our power base. We can be over here in America without any political resource, without any means of production. Even if we buy a million factories, comrade, if we do not own the land which furnishes the natural resources and the fuels that run the machines in said factory, we still have to pay who? An oppressor. Thus, we go back to my original point. We must reclaim, retake, and regovern over our own land and sovereign indigenous motherland, which is Africa, Akibulan. This is the only way, correct?
Straight up. Now, we in agreement. And so we thank you so much, brother, for that call. We want to thank Dennis Kimbrough for what he dropped. And we want you all to make sure that you go and get his book. We want to make sure that you get, he got several books, but he got one called What Makes the Great Great. What Makes the Great Great. We want to make sure that you get Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice by Dr. Dennis Kimbrough. And the latest one he did, The Wealth Choice, Success Secrets of Black Millionaires. The Wealth Choice, Success Secrets of Black Millionaires. And all of us, I hear this all the time, it's all about economics, Kweli. You've got to get economics. Can't talk about black power without this green power, which I can argue with you on that. But just to satisfy your thirst, let's make sure you go get The Wealth Choice, Success Secrets of Black Millionaires by our brother, Dr. Dennis Kimbrough, who is doing great work there at Clark Atlanta University and doing a great work internationally. You can go to DennisKimbrough.com. Again, that's www.DennisKimbrough.com, and support us here. The new Black Panther Party, we're bigger, we're stronger, we're bolder, we're better, and we are opening the doors to you to help this program. Call us at 347-903-0886. Again, that's 347-903-0886. Get in touch with us there at our headquarters
or go to newblackpanther.com and drop us a line. Tell us what you thought about the show. Email us at newblackpantherheadquarters@gmail.com. Send your suggestions. Send who you like for future guests and all that. We're here with Black Power. We're coming back up here at the 10:30 hour. We'll be on with the Honorable Chief Magistrate Maurice Muhammad down there from Birmingham, Alabama. We're talking about the criminal justice system, Operation Clean Slate, slowing down the prison industrial complex and all that. Join us right here tonight. We're coming back 10:30 right here at Black Power. We'll see you at the break. Black Power.
Black Power, free the land.
Yeah, Camachi and Priest. The chapel doors are back open.
Yeah.
I don't bargain with the devil or the sin he produced before I sell my people out. You can string up a noose, I'm a Zulu. I laugh at the lightning of Zeus, the light from my aura, enough to ripen the fruit.